Why does God allow suffering? We see this question all the time. Because it's how we grow. It's how we grow. My God, if the last decade has not proved this to us, the way this country turned on itself through politics, began to devour itself, and there's still a small set of people that are on board for big-time hate, which is really their fear, their lack of understanding. But to wage war on yourselves, you know, and the sadism, enjoying the suffering, the cruelty that now passes for political behavior, the deliberate cruelty, the meanness, the indecency, the immorality of it all. Surely you see how that has changed you, how it's changed other people, and developed this longing for loving kindness. Moving forward toward joy is the message we're beginning to hear.
Beyond politics and above organized religion, a moral authority exists known globally as the Ageless Wisdom. It is the study of consciousness, the mystery of awareness, which cannot be measured yet will not be denied. This podcast from Michael Benner's Ageless Wisdom Salon features lessons in metaphysics, mysticism, and esoteric philosophy. Those who attend live on Zoom may also participate in group meditation and roundtable discussions. Register for our newsletter at michaelbenner.com. Welcome to the Ageless Wisdom Mystery School with Michael Benner.
If we reduce today's topic to a single word, it would be assimilation. Our topic, assimilation, that's not an unusual or strange word, but you may not know it in the context of spiritual studies or the study of consciousness. Assimilation is going from a basic knowing or fundamental understanding to actually living the principles, to experiencing the phenomena that we often discuss when we study consciousness or mysticism or perennialism or non-duality. There's another one of those terms, Advaita, meaning not two, but one. Challenging separation. Assimilation is incorporating the understanding, the concepts into your life in such a way that it really verifies and reinforces your belief. So, what is this experience of wholeness, of oneness, this recognition that separation is an illusion? Is it just another belief system like religion? And beyond an appeal to logic and reasoning, how can we advance our knowing or our understanding of what it means to be the infinite and eternal awareness beyond thought, emotional feeling, physical sensation, and perception of the world through our physical senses? And how do we do that? Why does it take so damn long? Why is it so hard? And what can we do to accelerate that growth? And that's what I want to talk about today, the direct experience. That's why this is not a belief system. This process of assimilation is not a belief system. Now, I mentioned syncretism and perennialism. Let's dispatch the definitions of these, touch on it real quickly, because they're important terms and related to the whole idea of non-duality, Advaita, monism, the idea there's only one of us here and all separation is an appearance. And by the way, this is where all of our suffering comes from. All suffering, of course, all of our torment is the result of this identification with mind and body. Syncretism is a great word. It's a great concept. Syncretism, I guess, the only other way that I've ever heard it described is comparative religion. Syncretism is, as the prefix synchro, synchronize, might suggest, to find the common elements in an overarching understanding of philosophy, theology, and religion, and then to develop an understanding by releasing what all philosophies, all theologies, and all religions do not have in common. And this becomes a process where, as you do it, you understand more. It's sort of like putting a jigsaw puzzle together if you've never seen the cover of the box and you have no idea what the jigsaw puzzle is going to look like. And then as you slowly begin to assemble the jigsaw puzzle, you begin to get a sense of what's being revealed here. That's what happens with syncretism. You say, you know, Christianity is a lot like Buddhism. And Buddhism shares a lot with Taoism. And Sikhism seems to be sort of a blend between Islam and Hinduism. And then there's this old Neoplatonism from the Greek mystery schools. And there's a core, there's a thread, at least one thread, and maybe several threads that all religions, all theologies, and all philosophies have in common. And we can develop that understanding. That's syncretism. It's similar to assimilation. And then perennialism, which is a word I happen to like a lot, the perennial philosophy. Aldous Huxley wrote a book. If you want to add a wonderful book to your library, Aldous Huxley's The Perennial Philosophy. If you're a gardener, you know what a perennial is. It's a flower that blooms annually. You don't have to replant it. It's always going to come up. Well, perennialism is similar to syncretism in that it's an idea that there is a major... I think perennialism is even more certain about the understanding that all religion, all theology, theosophy, philosophy is born of a common truth or a set of common truths, and that it's up to us to find the heart and soul of that. That's the wisdom, that's the ageless wisdom. Is this perennialism, this idea that all these religions are variations on a single theme, as is all philosophy. That's perennialism. So assimilation, syncretism, perennialism, all similar, somewhat similar. These are basic terms that we have to learn and become familiar with if we're going to stretch our understanding and develop our understanding. And then truly assimilate these key principles, these core principles, into an understanding that serves us, that allows us, by recognizing that separation is an illusion, it results from identifying with the mind and the body, and that we can escape this self-imposed torment and this suffering by assimilating these principles, not just repeating them. If you just memorize everything that I say, or if I have only to offer you what I have memorized and play back by rote from other people. I'm not being of any real service to you. We can't just be tape recorders, right, that play back what we've read and what we've heard other people say. We've got to assimilate these principles into our lives in such a way that when we speak from our direct experience, from our personal experience, we open our hearts and allow to be a personal experience that we share with examples from our own lives of what we realized, and we applied this principle in this situation and got a benefit from it. And then as a result of that, began applying it more often and got further benefit from it. Sharing that with other people helps. What I'm going to talk about today is the process of assimilation in two ways. One is direct experience through observation, through mindfulness, in other words, looking for the connection, developing your ability, our ability, to see harmony, if not unity, where others see separation. The example I gave a couple of weeks ago that for whatever reason has really stuck with me is the idea of being stuck in traffic. In gridlock traffic, we all have had that experience, I'm sure. And the frustration that we tend to direct at other people who are also stuck in traffic as if it's their fault. As if they somehow caused your problem. Which is a failure, a profound failure to recognize that you're all in the same boat. You're all stuck in traffic. Nobody wants to be there. You all want the traffic to speed up and allow you to get to your destination. And yet there's a lot of anger and frustration and horn honking because we're just so conditioned to recognize everything outside of us as other than. So assimilation is difficult. There's a lot of work in it, but there's enormous joy and reward. It's not enough to just come to a class like this, read a book, watch a YouTube video, listen to some Alan Watts, you know, and wonder why your life doesn't change. Your life is the proving ground. It's the test. It's the school. It's one lesson after another. It's the reason for being. The reason for existing is to practice this material. This waking up. This awakening. I haven't talked about it in a while, but a couple other well-known processes for developing mindful awareness, free from judgment, in the present moment, include mindful walking. The Vietnamese monk who just passed away recently, Thich Nhat Hanh, wrote at least one book on mindful walking and spoke of it often. Mindful walking is not about getting to a particular place. It's that, like that old saw, it's the journey, not the destination. Mindful walking is about the walking. It's about putting your awareness on how it feels to place your heel on the ground as your momentum carries you forward, you roll up onto the balls of your feet. And then as you begin to push off with the toes, the other leg swings through and does the same thing. And you feel your feet, whether you're wearing shoes or slippers, or I've taken to wearing soleless moccasins. Soleless. That's a funny word. Moccasins without soles or insoles to feel the ground better. I feel more grounded. It helps me feel the earth, feel the ground, whatever I'm walking on. But of course, that's not the only way to walk mindfully. As you walk mindfully, you can look around. But your attention is in the present moment. What you wish to avoid is thinking about the past and thinking about the future, because that's where all the anxiety is. That's where all the stress is. That's why the ego nature keeps dragging you into the past or into the future, because it's looking for danger. And in the present moment, there isn't any. You're safe. But if you want happiness in your life and to be free from suffering, you have to sit in the present moment. Even if that feels like confronting some disaster, some pain, some suffering, some anxiety, some worry, whatever. You observe it without judging it as good or bad, right or wrong. What do you mean, Michael? How can I observe my, let's say, physical pain and discomfort or my emotional irritation without judging it as a bad thing? Well, that's the challenge. You may find it a lot easier not to judge a happy situation because you want more of that. But happiness and peace and joy is, these are emotions, these are objects. This is not awareness. They're like thoughts. These feelings come up to tell you to keep doing whatever you're doing. Stay the course. And the negative feelings, so-called, only because it hurts, it's really not, negative feelings are really not negative, they're full of information. They're exceedingly valuable. Like the gauges in the dashboard of your car. You may not want this gauge to indicate a problem or this red light to flash to indicate a problem, but that's why they're there, covering up the dashboard with heavy brown wrapping paper is not going to prevent you from having a problem. You're better off knowing, right? Well, that's why your sadness comes upon you. That's why your frustration comes upon you, your contempt for other people, whatever negative feeling, so-called, you feel, very valuable. It's only called negative because it hurts, but it hurts because it needs to get your attention. And these feelings say there's a need for a course correction. Time to learn, time to observe even more closely. What can I learn from this situation? But if it's not just some random thing that I wish hadn't happened to me, but part of a life that is perfect in every way, in terms of showing me, presenting me with opportunities to learn what I need to learn, then you can move through all of that a lot more elegantly, a lot more gracefully. And we can learn what there is to learn from our emotional discomfort, our physical discomfort, our relationships gone sour, or anything else that we would like to avoid, that we wish, that we may wish had not happened. But if every day was happy, if every day was tra-la-la, sunshine and rainbows, you wouldn't learn. We would not grow. We would stagnate. Why does God allow suffering? You see this question all the time. Because it's how we grow. It's how we grow. And God, if the last decade has not proved this to us, the way this country turned on itself through politics, began to devour itself, and there's still a small set of people that are on board for big-time hate, which is really their fear, their lack of understanding. But to wage war on yourselves, you know, and the sadism, enjoying the suffering, the cruelty that now passes for political behavior, the deliberate cruelty, the meanness, the indecency, the immorality of it all. Surely you see how that has changed you, how it's changed other people, and developed this longing for loving kindness. Moving forward toward joy is the message we're beginning to hear. In a very non-political way, which I love. People used to ask me back in the radio days, why don't you run for office? I said, well, because politics has no solutions any more than war is a solution. There's no evidence that anything is improved as a result of political wrangling. There's got to be some legislation and got to be a judicial branch and some executive administration at a governmental level, various levels of government. But I had no interest in that because I always felt that people think and feel and act the way they do because of consciousness. And if we want to change the world, we have to change our consciousness. We have to be more aware, develop ourselves. And adversity and conflict is how that happens. So when it comes up in our lives, I don't expect you to jump for joy. Oh, yay, I have this severe illness. Now I'll learn. Oh, my God, my partner kicked me to the curb and abandoned me. Or I just got fired from my job. Yippee, what a wonderful opportunity. No, you know, you will suffer. We all do. Life is difficult at times. It's really, really difficult. But it is an opportunity, don't you see? It's an opportunity to sit and meditate and contemplate and ponder and reflect and look for the pony. Look for the silver lining. Look for the treasure in the middle of the filth. The opportunity to learn so that you don't have to keep going through the same thing over and over and over again. And you will find it. You will find that pattern. My sister has a story she likes to tell about this beautiful tapestry that is upside down. And so you only see the back of the tapestry. And it's a tangled maze of colored threads that make no sense at all. And there's nothing beautiful or harmonious or nothing. It's not revealing anything until you turn it over. And then, oh, I see. I was looking at the backside. If we can just turn it over and look for the harmony, even if we're not clear what it is or why this has to happen or how I contributed in bringing this into my life, the karma behind it, or please don't consider any of it punishment. It's not punishment. There is no punishment here. Karma is action. It's karma is the consequences of what we do, what we think, and most directly our intentions. But the beauty is there. The harmony is there. We don't have to attain it so much as look for it through direct experience. Now, the second way is self-inquiry. which I'm not going to touch on too much. I want to stay today with this idea of direct experience. But self-inquiry, we've talked about in the past and will again in the future. Who am I? Just meditating on who am I? Who am I really? Anything that comes and goes is part of the impermanent world. How true can the material world be if nothing in it lasts? How could it be reality if it is in constant flux? It doesn't look like reality. That doesn't look like truth. But what remains is the observer. What does last? Like that bumper sticker, you can't take it with you. All these material things that we attempt to acquire and possess and then repair and replace and build up our stockpile for some sense of security or satisfaction, some enjoyment. And material things do provide a lot of enjoyment, no question about it, but none of it lasts. The enjoyment doesn't last. The satisfaction of getting it doesn't last. And the object itself doesn't last. It's all breaking down, right? Everything breaks down. The only thing that remains, the only thing that is infinite and eternal, that which remains, is our awareness, consciousness, sometimes called love, sometimes called knowledge, sometimes called understanding, sometimes called being. So self-inquiry aside, we'll touch on that in the future again. Who am I? Why am I here? What am I for? What remains? If I watch what comes and goes, what remains? That great tool that we learned a few months ago, where you say to yourself while you're watching your thoughts, gee, I wonder what thought will occur to me next. And all of a sudden, the monkey mind stops. But like you called its bluff. You got out in front of it, and you looked at it, and it went away. Gee, I wonder, I'm anticipating the next thought, and nothing comes. It's when you're not anticipating the next thought, 99% of your waking life, that it streams. And the more anxious and the more confused and the more uncertain we are, the more it streams, these crazy ideas, these thoughts, and we feel like we have to micromanage, we have to pursue them, chase them down. And, no, you don't. Let them go. The hell, let them go. Be the awareness. Be the understanding. With a little smile on your face. Right? That's where the profound contentment, the real fulfillment, the joy and the happiness and peace is waiting. Not a matter of attainment. It's already there. In addition to direct observation, mindfulness, and meditation, in our waking state, mindful walking, there's mindful eating. And I challenge you to find one meal that you're willing to eat alone or with somebody who is willing to allow you not to speak during that meal. Feels very awkward. Hell, eating alone feels awkward. Going into a restaurant by yourself, a lot of people cannot do that. I always took a magazine or a book with me. Or now people have phones, iPads and such, so there's always something to do. To just sit there, difficult for most people. But imagine every once in a while, a couple of times a week, hell, once a week, if you could, one meal by yourself where the only thing you do is watch yourself eat. you consciously chew the food. And while you're chewing the food, you're thinking only of chewing the food. And some related topic, like the presence of saliva and how that begins the digestion of the food while it's still in your mouth. Or you may think of the fact that you are careful to buy organic food. Or wholesome, healthful foods that you eat in a balanced way. Maybe you think about where the food came from, all the steps along the way, where it came from, the farm, the dairy, the slaughterhouse. If it's plant, vegetable food, maybe you think about the role of the sun and the water and the nutrients in the soil and the way the plant draws upon the mineral kingdom for its growth. And then you eat the plant. So the plant becomes a mineral delivery system. It's a way of getting the elements of the earth into your body. Or maybe you eat the animal that ate the plant that drew upon the mineral kingdom, and you reflect on what a miracle this is that life has evolved in this way. But there is the mineral kingdom which gives birth, gives rise to, and nourishes the plant kingdom, which nourishes the animal kingdom, which includes the human, or you could think of us as an emerging kingdom, kingdom of conscious souls, relying on all the lower kingdoms. Because if you went out and tried to get the minerals by eating dirt, you'd starve. So what is this miracle of light and water and minerals, gases, nitrogen, oxygen, carbon dioxide, the way nitrogen is fixed in the soil, the role of the earthworms. Imagine doing that while you eat, instead of reading the back of the cereal box to minimize the anxiety of just sitting there alone with nothing to do. We'd sooner read the package, or think about anything else, or have conversation such that you eat the entire meal and have no awareness of having eaten anything. And things that we do without awareness, we tend to do poorly. So mindful walking, mindful eating, mindful meditation. Here's another one I like. Watching the sun go down. You might say, well, I don't have time for this. I'm busy. I have things to do. Okay, I understand. But maybe once in a while, maybe on a Saturday, maybe tonight or tomorrow, Sunday, have a holiday, happy Labor Day, Monday. You could go outside an hour before sunset and watch it happen. Deliberately, purposefully, watch it happen. There is a season, I'm not sure now if it's spring or fall, I've forgotten which is which, but there is a season each year when Venus is the evening star rather than the morning star. And it's the brightest star in the sky. Of course, it's not a star, it's a planet, but it's very bright. And it's the first one you see. So I had this routine where I would sit outside. Last few months, it's been too hot to do this, but maybe 8 months out of the year I can do it. Sit outside and look at the sky. Listen to the birds. Because they get all busy toward the end of the day. They get really busy. They may goof off all day long, but early in the morning, first thing, and late in the afternoon, last thing, they get busy eating and getting their water and proclaiming their territory with their songs. And I just wait for Venus to pop out. Oh, there it is. No, it's not there yet. I thought it. Oh, yeah, that is it. Oh, yeah, there it is. Okay. And then you just watch it get dark. Now, what most of us do is we're inside and it starts to get dark. What do? You turn the lights on. This is me too. That's what we're taught to do. We don't let it get dark in the house. We turn the lights on so we can see. And of course, we've usually got the TV going or the radio's on or you're working on your computer or texting or busy doing this or busy doing that. All of which are distractions from simply being. And there's no opportunity then to assimilate this wholeness, this oneness that we're talking about, this unity, this rejection of otherness. Probably the best definition of love I've ever heard. The absence of otherness. That's what love is. It's the glue that holds what appears to be separate together as one whole thing. Consciousness, love, awareness. Let it get dark. Your body will appreciate that. The rhythms. We've got 3 million years of evolution where nobody had lights to turn on. It's only been 150 years that we've had lights. I mean, you want to go back further to kerosene lamps and before that torches or campfires? Still not quite the same as just turning on all the lights in the house because it's getting dark. Let the darkness settle. Let the twilight roll in slowly. And watch it. Watch it happen. Again, I know the demands on our time is such that it might seem, oh, what are you talking about, Michael? I'm way too busy to do that. All right, fine. You don't have an hour for yourself, really? Maybe we do. Maybe we could do that. And even if you did it every third day, 2 or 3 times a week, wouldn't that be wonderful? Just watch it happen. All of you, open all of your senses. You can go around the horn. Spend 60 seconds on what do I see? Waiting for Venus. Noticing as the sun goes lower, the color of the light changes. Getting less yellow, more orange, or goes from white to yellow to orange, sort of a butterscotch. Look at the color of the light. Then 60 seconds or 2 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever, just on hearing, what do I hear? What do I hear that I've never heard before? What's been here all along that I've never noticed? How many different birds, many different bird songs can I hear? Can I hear the insects? If a bird flies by, can you hear the sound of the wings in the air? Sometimes you can. If you listen, if you really. And if your mind is not filled with the sound of judging every thought that comes along, there is sort of a noise that goes with that. And then go to smelling, for example, or tasting. What can I smell? What fragrances, what scents do I smell? And maybe initially you don't smell anything at all. So sit with a gentle focus on fragrance, on scent, as a sensation, and see if it doesn't develop, if it doesn't expand over 2 or 3 minutes. Life for most of us is a set of deliberate distractions. The reason we're busy, the reason we do everything that we can to stay busy, to fill that dance card and keep it full, doing, is to avoid the discomfort of being with nothing to do but observe. And yet everything is at stake here. If you want growth, if you want freedom, if you want, my God, peace of mind, if you want joy, happiness for no reason, the joy we were all born with, when a baby laughs or giggles, have you ever wondered, what's it got to be happy about? Did it have a desire fulfilled? Did it have a need met? Or is it possible it's happy for no reason? It's just happy. Not always. It may get a little gassy and cry. It may be experiencing some strange feeling, some cramp or irritation and cry. Maybe not enough sleep, maybe not enough attention, enough holding, enough comforting. This is how we assimilate all this teaching, all this, listen to all the Alan Watts tapes you want, all the YouTube, but fill your bookcase with all these books. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm always looking. My eyes are so bad I can't even read a book, and I'm still looking. I'm still looking for new books. So yeah, continue to read and study and listen to audio tapes and podcasts. And hopefully you'll continue to come to this class and practice some of the techniques that we talk about here and ponder and reflect. But direct experience and self-inquiry are ways of actually assimilating this information, of making it real, of living out the principles such that separation, the illusion of separateness, falls away, and you begin to see harmony and peace and love and kindness in the most remarkable of places.